think you're on.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. So today, in honor of being Lag BaOmer and our Mesoira is at the yahrzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, as there are thousands upon thousands of Yidden today in Meiron. Right, we'll get to that. We're going to go through the sugya of the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. I'm assuming it's very coincidental that it happens to be on Daf Lamed Gimel, the 33rd page of Masechta Shabbos. Total coincidence that on Lag BaOmer we'll learn Daf Lamed Gimel and Shabbos, all about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Many of us are familiar with the
basic story.
Yeah. Many of us are familiar with the basic story, but we're going to go through it and focus on particular details that I would like to discuss today. So the Gemara tells us there were three Talmidei Chachamim sitting, Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi, Rabbi Yossi. I'm just going to really paraphrase most of the very long Gemara. I'm going to paraphrase it at the best of my ability right now. So Rabbi Yehuda bar Loi, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai were sitting, and they came on to a discussion of discussing the Romans, who were the leading government at the time. And Rav Yehuda started by saying, seemingly praising the Romans and saying, they're so amazing to us. They built us beautiful markets. They built us these great bridges that we can get around. They built us these beautiful bathhouses. That's how Rav Yehuda starts the conversation. Rav Yossi was sitting there, he was quiet. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai sitting there says, no, it's not true. Everything, it's true, they built great things, but they all did it for their own personal benefit. They built these beautiful markets in order they can have their zaynos there. They built these bathhouses in order they can find pleasure for themselves and enjoy themselves. And they built these bridges so they can collect tolls and taxes from us. So they built all these things, really did it for their own benefit. There was a fellow there who overheard the Chacham talking. His name was Yehuda ben Geirim, Yehuda the son of Geirim. And Rashi tells us both his father and mother were converts. And he went and started speaking over this conversation he heard amongst the rabbis that day at home. And from there, he didn't speak it out to the government per se. He didn't go, so to speak, and snitch on what he heard. But he just was the one who was spreading what he heard. Did you hear what Talmidei Chacham were speaking about today? Eventually, the government caught wind of what had happened amongst these great rabbanim. And they said as follows, Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Loi, who praised us, we'll make him like the chief. He'll be the main speaker for Judaism. Rabbi Yossi, who was quiet, he didn't say negative or positive, we'll put him in exile, and he was sent off to Tzipiri. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who degraded us, we're going to kill him. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai hears that there's a price on his head, and he goes and runs with his son, Rabbi Lazar, to hide in the Beis Medrash. Where else is a better place to hide for a Jewish man in the Beis Medrash? And they went and they sat and they learnt in the Beis Medrash. Every day, the Gemara says, his wife would bring to him a loaf of bread and some water, and they sat and they learnt until some time came on. Doesn't say how long it was, but this went on for some time until he felt that the Gezer was there. You know, they were searching for him more and more. And Shimon tells his son a popular phrase that is often quoted in the Gemara, which we'll try to explain shortly. Nashim daitan kala, women are their das, their intellect is lighter, and I'm afraid that my wife, your mother, will get oppressed, and the Romans will oppress her and try to force the information out of her where we are. So it's not safe for us now anymore to stay in the Beis Medrash. We got to continue to flee, and they run to a cave. The Gemara doesn't tell us exactly where the cave was, but they run to a cave and they hide in the cave. The Gemara says, as we're familiar, there was a nace that happened in the cave. They obviously couldn't take with them too much food if they took any at all, and a carob tree sprouts out of the ground, and a spring of water comes. Again, this is an area which was not an orchard. This is an area that was not suitable really for any vegetation. And miraculously, this tree and this stream appears. And they would sit. They sat all day long, covered in the sand. The Gemara says they took off their clothes so their clothes should not get worn out. They sat and they covered up to their necks in their sand. They would learn all day, and whenever it was time to daven, the Gemara says they would come out of the sand. They would put on their clothing, daven, and then take off their clothing in order that it shouldn't get worn out, and sit in the sand all day. This went on day in and day out for 12 years. Quite some time to be stuck in a cave. Doesn't say really what they did for lighting or anything like that nature, but it must have been pretty dim and pretty hard in there. 12 years later, Eliyahu HaNavi is standing by the entrance of the cave, and he speaks out loud. He says, who's going to let Bar Yochai know that the Roman emperor has died and this Gezerah has been annulled? So Shimon bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Lazar heard the message. Obviously, they understood that it's safe for them to come out. So they come out of the cave after learning undisturbed for 12 years. And they see the first thing they're greeted by is as they're walking back towards the Yishuv, to where people are living. They see people working the fields. They are plowing and planting. And they remark, it's unbelievable. How are people occupying themselves and with chayisha, with these such mundane things, and they're you know, shirking their responsibility for chay olam haba? They should be learning. The other people they can hire goyim to work in the field for them. Why are they being the ones working? And the Gemara says, kol malkam shenayis name ever the Rebbe Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and his son Rebbe Elazar looked miyad nisra from their high level of kedusha, things were just burning up. All of a sudden, a baskel comes forth, a heavenly voice emanates and says, why'd you come out of the cave? Did you come out of the cave to destroy the world? Go back to the cave. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar go back in the cave for 12 more months. And they say after 12 months, listen, the Rishayim and Gehenim don't go for more than 12 months. So we came back into the cave to atone for what we did. So we were here for 12 months. They hear a baskel that says, okay, it's time to come out of the cave. And they come out of the cave. And the Gemara says that still doesn't, not clear exactly, but Rabbi Elazar still had this thing of whenever he looked at something that was seemingly not on a high level of kedusha, something bad would happen to it, and Rabbi Elazar would be masi, he would heal anything he would look at. Well, yeah, we'll get to that in a minute, particularly, but here it doesn't say what exactly happened to people. In this part of the Gemara, Mar just says it was machi Rabbi Elazar. Whenever Rabbi Elazar would look at people, they would get damaged, or something bad would happen to them, and Rabbi Shimon would look at them and they would get healed. And Rabbi Shimon tells his son, Bini, my dear son, Dai la'olam aniva ata. Don't worry about other people, whether they're learning properly or not. Our level of learning is on such a high level, we can sustain the world with our Torah learning. And then they're walking, and it was Erev Shabbos, the Gemara says, and they meet an elderly gentleman who's running right before Shabbos, and he's holding two bundles of hadassim. And they ask him, excuse me, where are you going? What are you doing? He says, well, I'm running to get ready for Shabbos. And they ask him, why do you have these hadassim, these beautiful, sweet-smelling flowers? And he says, well, they're l'kavod Shabbos. They say, well, why do you need to have two? Isn't one enough l'kavod Shabbos? And he says, what do you mean? One's for Zohar, one's for Shamar. For the two mitzvahs of Shabbos, the way it's in the Teres Adibris, and he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah in a great way. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai tells his son, look how chaviv the mitzvahs are in Klal Yisrael. Parenthetically, this is a source, the Vilna Gaon says in Shulchan Aruch, this is a source why most people have the custom to light at least two candles on Friday night. From this Gemara that we see, two is a way to represent the idea of Shabbos, one keneged Zohar, one keneged Shamar. So Rabbi Elazar is, so to speak, appeased. He's calmed down after he sees how precious the mitzvahs are to the Jewish people. A little further in the story, Rav Pinchas ben Yair, who is the son-in-law of Rav Shimon, hears that his father-in-law and his brother-in-law have come out of the cave. He goes to find out where they are, and he finds them in the bathhouse trying to heal their wounds. They were sitting in the sand for 12, 13 years. Their skin must have been in pretty bad shape. And Rav Pinchas ben Yair, when he sees his father-in-law in such a pitiful physical condition, he starts crying. And all the tears, the Gemara says, that fell on the wounds of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai were burning him. And Rav Shimon Pinchas ben Yair said, it's so hard for me to see you in such a situation. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai tells him, Ashrecha, no, fortunate you are to see me in this situation. Shel molei, loy risini bikach, loy matzasi bikach. If you would have seen me in this, you wouldn't get to the high level of Torah. Meaning, he told him, to make kara, what it used to be before I went into the cave, when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai would ask a shayla, his son-in-law would give him 12 answers. Any suffix, any question he had in Torah, Rav Pinchas ben Yair would answer Rav Shimon, his father-in-law, for 12 terutzim. Now Rav Shimon tells him, any question you ask me, Rav Pinchas ben Yair, I can answer you in 24 answers. So he said that he rose to such a high level of Torah, although right now he might have been in bad shape, and whatever therapy he was needed physically to get him back into shape. But he told him, nonetheless, I've now risen to a high level of Havanas HaTorah. And the Gemara continues to conclude with another interesting story, but we're not going to go into it so much now. The Rav Shimon Bar Yochai felt he should do something as a benefit for the public, just like we found by Yaakov Avinu after he was saved from a miracle. He wanted to do something to help the public, so he went ahead and he found a place where they had a suffix, where there was Tumah. They weren't sure if there was a cemetery there or not. He went ahead and cleaned it up. The Gemara concludes after that story, all the way at the end, that he bumps into Yehuda ben Geirim. And remember, Yehuda ben Geirim was the original person who was the one who spread this whole thing that caused Rav Shimon Bar Yochai to run into the cave. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai sees him and says, oh, you're still around? He picks up his eyes, the Gemara says. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai picks up his eyes, looks at Yehuda ben Geirim, and Yehuda ben Geirim falls into a pile of bones. That's the end of him. Okay, that's an interesting discussion unto itself, how exactly that works and why that happened. But okay, so let's just discuss. We're try now to go through seven main questions that many of the more halachas farim deal with in regards to this Gemara. This Gemara is full of agadata, full of many, you can spend at least a whole day, if not more, discussing all the different interesting parts of this story, plus the details I didn't even have a chance to speak out. We're going to try to focus on seven main questions, but just want to first speak out that the Sfarim tell us that there's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is represented in Shas in two different ways. There's Stam Rav Shimon. Anytime it says Rav Shimon without a ben somebody in the Gemara, Rashi tells us, and the Rambam says like this as well, that any Stam Rav Shimon in the Gemara is always Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And anytime it says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it's also Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So why sometimes referred to as Rabbi Shimon and sometimes referred to as Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? So many Sfarim say that it depends. If it was a teaching that he taught before he went into the Ma'ara, before he went into the cave, then he's often quoted as just plain Rav Shimon. Once he reached a level of this high level that he got after learning uninterrupted for 13 years in a cave, now he's referred to as Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. They don't really explain why, but I would like to, if everyone could stay tuned to the end, I'd like to say a pshat why, particularly now, we're attributing him to his father's name. But I saw a list, there's a list brought down the Sefer Midos to Rashbi, that if you go through the Talmud Bavli, Yerushalmi, and the regular Midrashim Sheben Nigla, not the Nistar Sfarim, not the Kabbalistic Sfarim, not the Zohar, but all the Nigla Sfarim, Reb Shimon or Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, sum total is mentioned 4,245 times. So there's quite a lot of Torah that we were Zeicha to merit to hear from Reb Shimon, 4,245 memories of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai or Reb Shimon throughout the Talmud. So it's nothing to be taken lightly, the high level of Torah that Reb Shimon achieved.
Did
so
anyone mention more than that in the Torah?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. That's pretty impressive. Okay. He wondered if there's somebody, if there's any Atana who's mentioned even more than that. I don't know. But I would venture to say probably not. Okay, so the first Ta'ara I wanted to discuss, just a quick one, is that we pointed out the Gemara says that Nashim Daitin Kalas, the Nashim have their level of Das is lighter, is less than men. The problem with this is we have a Gemara Nida that's often quoted that a woman has Bina Yisera, a woman has a higher level of Bina, of understanding. So what is how do we shtim, how do we put together these two ideas, the fact that Nashim Daitin Kalas and the fact that a woman has Bina Yisera. So the Ritva in Nida and other Rishayim as well over there, I just copied off the Ritva, says in source number 2, Pirish Shema Maheres Lahavin. A woman is quicker to understand certain things. The Eloi Ha'amina Nashim Daitin Kala. So the way this is understood in the Sfarim, that although a woman could understand things quicker, but not necessarily in the long term, is that going to put them on a higher level of intellect? Now, we're speaking here to a mensch here, but we got to be careful how we say it. But the idea is that women will be quicker to grasp many things, but it doesn't mean necessarily in the long run that they'll digest that material on the same level of a man. So that's why Reb Shimon was afraid, Nashim Daitin Kalos, that his wife might be overly convinced over time by the Romans to spill the beans, so he had to go and run into the cave. Okay, that's Ara 1. Now let's get down to more halachic problems. The next shaila is based on the Gemara earlier in Shabbos and Daf Yud Aleph. There the Gemara is discussing various things that a person should not do before davening or before saying Kriya Shema, and if he started, when he stops. So the Gemara there says the last couple of lines that the Tanya Chaveim Shaya Oiskim B'Torah, people who are a group of studying Torah, Mafsikin the Kriya Shema, they should stop to say Kriya Shema, V'ein Mafsikin the Tefillah, but they don't have to stop for davening. Rabbi Yechanan, who does this refer to? Says Rabbi Yechanan, Loishanu Ela Kigoyin Rav Shimon Bar Yochai V'Chaveriv. This high level of people that are studying Torah, they don't even have to stop to daven. That only refers to people in the category of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and his friends. Shetayrasan Umnasan. They were completely dedicated to Torah. I will Kigoyin Anu, but us, Rabbi Yechanan says, Mafsikin the Kriya Shema Tefillah. So Rabbi Yechanan is already saying in his day, is an Amayra, is coming couple generations after Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that we're not on the same level as Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, though, is on the highest of high level that he doesn't have to even break to daven. Kriya Shema he'll have to stop for, but does not have to break to daven. So Taisus asked the Kasha. We just said the Gemara in Daf Lama Gilma Mabez, that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was learning in the cave, covered in sand, and he uncovered himself le'atzlule to daven. So why did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai have to daven? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was putter from davening simply because his Torah was on such a high level, completely dedicated to learning, he would not have to stop to daven. So why does the Gemara tell us, this is Taisus Kasha, why does the Gemara tell us that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had to stop, put on his clothing and daven and then go back to learning? So Taisus has a chiddush over here. Taisus says Umatzli, hahu matzli hainu kriya shema. Tais on the left side says that when the Gemara says that Rav Shimon bar Yochai davened, matzli, which is typically Aramaic for davening, Tais says the chiddush that davening over there in that Gemara refers only to kriya shema. So according to Taisvis on the Afid Aleph and Shabbos, Rav Shimon bar Yochai, when he was in the cave, he never had to stop to daven. The only thing he stopped for was for kriya shema. Now, I didn't copy you off, but if you see in that Taisa, there's a little tzion over there, a little sign, where it goes to Rabbi Kivager in the Gemara. Rabbi Kivager asks a question on this from another source, which seems to imply that matzli never means kriya shema. Matzli in Aramaic always means davening. And he leaves off as a question, and the Mefarshim deal with this at length. What does the word matzli mean? If any other place in Shas, almost always, it always refers to davening. So why would Taisa over here say it refers to kriya shema? There are those that say, that argue on Taisa and say that once you stop for kriya shema, you're already not learning. Once you're not learning, you have to then go ahead and continue davening. So then it kind of gets you into a circular logic. Then what does it mean? You don't stop for davening. You have to stop for kriya shema. If you stop for kriya shema, you have to stop for, then automatically you continue davening. So what does that mean? Rav Shimon bar Yochai didn't have to daven. So that's a question I'm not going to fully answer right now, but at least according to Taisvis, the way we properly understand this, the situation with Rav Shimon bar Yochai in the cave was not that he davened three times a day, rather he said kriya shema, presumably shacharis, and at night.
Let him say kriya shema on the sand. He says you have to be locked.
Oh, that's another question, right? Why do you have to get dressed? Right, the halacha of getting dressed for davening, hichal mikra es Hashem alekecha, to prepare yourself, seemingly is a halacha in only in tefillah. In tefillah. But for kriya shema, which is just kabbalah omach shemaim, you don't have to get dressed. That would seem to imply that he did daven properly. So maybe, like the other mefarshim who learned, not like Taisa, that he stopped for kriya shema, and then once he stopped for kriya shema, which is not the same as learning, he would then have to continue davening. But it's something to think about, what exactly did Rav Shimon bar Yochai daven, or how he davened in the ma'ara. The next ha'ara is as follows. So we said when Rav Shimon bar Yochai first came out of the cave, he was upset that he saw people working in the field, and he said, you know, what is this? People are forsaking Chaye Olam Haba, they're not occupying themselves in a profession that will lead them to Olam Haba. They're busy plowing and planting the field, which they can get Goyim to do for them. And that people were being burned up until he went back into the cave. The question is, the Gemara Menachas in source number 4 tells us, Amar Rabbi Yechon Mishum Mishum Bar Yochai, Afilu Loi Kara Adam Ela Kriya Shema Shachris V'Arvis, if a person would only recite Kriya Shema in the morning and by Ma'ariv, Kayim lo yomush, he fulfills the pasuk of a person shlo yomush sefer Torah zemi picha, a person should never separate himself and not have Torah with him. But davazel also lo oimer b'fnei amaretz. So Rabbi Yechonon concluded, you're not allowed to amaretz in this because amaretz, they're going to say, well, we don't have to learn. We're just very satisfied, or we're very satisfied with our daily reciting of kriya shema, shachris, and ma'ariv. So we don't have to worry about learning anything else. Rava says on the opposite, you should tell amaretz, because if they see, look how much schar they get for just saying kriya shema, they'll say, oh, they'll make a kavah chaymer, all the more so, we'll get more schar if we learn the whole day. Okay, be that as it may, but we're going to take out from here, Rav Shimon bar Yochai says, you fulfill the idea of Talmud Torah, of learning, of lo yomash sefer Torah hazeh mipicha, if you just say kriya shema. So what's he so upset about people working in the field and plowing and planting? Presumably they davened in the morning, they said kriya shema, they're going to daven at night, they have Talmud Torah. Why is he upset that they're not learning? They do learn. They fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's not like, so fine, they're not on the highest of high level. But l'chayra, they have mitzvah of Talmud Torah. You can't just burn them up because they're not on the highest of high. So there's different mahalchem at answers, but I saw one answer in the Stei Chemed. The Stei Chemed says that perhaps when Rav Shimon bar Yochai was upset and he saw these people, that was before he heard the baskel. Once he heard the baskel and he went back into the cave, perhaps then he was machadish this halacha that la yomush sefer Torah zemi picha is going to fulfill Talmud Torah. I think it's very meduyik like this because it says Rav Shimon bar Yochai. We start off saying that there are many svarim that say anytime it mentions Rav Shimon bar Yochai, it's after the ma'ara. So if it's after the ma'ara, it makes a lot of sense why particularly now the Rashbi is mentioning this idea that you're yoytze Talmud Torah. Again, we asked, how if you're yoytze Talmud Torah, then the chayra, why is he upset at them? The answer is, he only was machadish that halacha in part 2 of the cave, in this last 12 months of when he was learning in the cave, when he came up with this halacha, that if you say kriya shema, you could be yoytze Talmud Torah. The Shulchan Aruch Harav, in the Kuntres Talmud Torah, in the back of After Yeridea, there he says, he has a mahalach, that there's two parts of mitzvahs Talmud Torah. There's limud Talmud Torah, which of course you can fulfill with kriya shema, and then there's yediyas haTorah. Every person has to know kol Torah kula as much as he's able to. So Rav Shimon bar Yochai over here, according to Shulchan Aruch Harav, is learning that you can be yaitza, the mitzvah of limud Torah, but the mitzvah of yediyas haTorah, to have a complete mastery over as much Torah as each person is able to properly accomplish, Chaklish, you're not going to get just that by Kriya Shema. That's only going to get you at a very base level. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wanted everybody to get the highest level they could aspire to, and that's how he learns this Gemara. Okay, the next, and that you can look through, I didn't speak out source 5, but there, okay, the Taisa Rosh and Taisa Ben Yehuda Chassan in Brachas kind of work well with what we just said. The sixth, in the source number 6, we're up to the fourth Ha'ara, which is really a big question, is like this. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, in sum total, was 13 years in the cave. That's numerous Shabbosim. You can do the math, how many Shabbosim is in the cave. 13 Pesach cycles, 13 Sukkoses, etc. Right? He's in the cave for all these Yom Tov and Shabbosim. How did he fulfill all the mitzvahs? How did he make Kiddush Friday night? How did he have Lecha Mishnah and Suda Shabbos? How did he have Matzah? How did he have Mar? How did he build a Sukkah? So this question was asked, not just the way we're asking it, but with even a little more oomph to the Rav Pa'olim, which is the Ben Ishchai in Shuvas. So he was asked, he said, the Sheila, it says, Masha'omer Rashbi be'idra. Now it's Rashbi. Okay, hold on. Right, we'll get to that answer in a minute. Rashbi writes in Idra. Idra is part of the Sifrei HaZayar. There's two volumes. One's called Idra Rabba, one's called Idra Zuta. I don't have either one of them, so I couldn't look it up exactly where he's quoted as saying this. But the Idra Zuta, the second part of Idra, was all the Torah that the Rashbi said on the last day of his life. So to speak, his farewell address. All the halachas he said in the last day of his life, but I'm not sure which part of Idra this is stated in. But in one part of Idra, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is quoted that Kol Yomai, all my days, Lo Bitalna Tlas Sudas of the Shabbat. I never missed fulfilling the halacha of having three meals on Shabbos. So the Shoyal, the person over here, asked the Ben Ishchai, Halai B'Ma'ara Yud Gimel Shana. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave 13 years and he ate Buxer. That's what the Gemara tells us. He ate only the carob. And Suda Shabbos needs bread. So how could he say that he never abolished and he never missed out having the three meals of Shabbos? And he concludes how to eat matzah and other things, other mitzvahs, how did he fulfill? So the first answer, which is kind of all the answer maybe on the tip of most of our tongues that the Ben Ishchai responds, is that okay, he was stuck in this cave because death notice hanging over his head, and being in a matzav of such an oinus, he writes, "V'azu pater mishalosh sudas." He was pater from having the three sudas, and he was pater from matzah, he's pater from mar, he's pater from sukkah, he's pater from lulav and shayfer, etc. Any mitzvah that he was not able to fulfill, then he's considered to be an oinus. But then he says, and any time a person's in a matzav of an oinus and he can't fulfill the mitzvah, that's not considered bottle that he was mevat, that he abolished that mitzvah. Excuse me. When do we say that a person's held accountable for missing out on the mitzvah? That's when we had the physical capabilities of doing it, and for whatever reason, we relax or lazy and we didn't fulfill the mitzvah properly. In such a matziv, says the first teretz of the Ben Ishchai, when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave, so he was not able to fulfill the mitzvahs physically, so therefore he's considered oinus, and so he was potter from all these mitzvahs. So the first pshat, very simply, is that he didn't do it. Okay, that's an easy one to digest. The second part, he says, v'dah, he says, he tells the Shoyal in the second paragraph there, he says, if you really wanted to ask me a good question, you should have asked it even better. How could he say, Kol Yomai Loi Betzilna, all my days I never was Mevatel the Mitzvah? Let's say the years he was out of the cave. There are some times, as we know, when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, there's a big question, how do we fulfill Shalosh Shudas? Because we have to stop eating the chametz early in the morning, we can't eat matzah the whole day, so it's a big halachic dilemma, how does a person in such a situation fulfill the three Sudas of Shabbos? He says, how could it be mehecha dechal erev Pesach b'Shabbos the ef shalakayim suda shlishis b'pas? You can't have shal shudas of bread at that time. So we all know what we do l'maisa, but what did Rav Shimon Bar Yochai do? So he brings down from a sefer Mikdash Melech, which is on the Zohar. Again, it was not available to me to see it inside, but I'm taking the Ben Ishchai's word for it. He says in the middle of that second paragraph there, he says, v'zeh l'shoynei d'loy batilna sudas to Shabbos pirish. What does it mean? Kidem Farish Rabbi Abba, the Samachakar Rabbi Abba explains over there in the Sefer Idra, Shaya Kaire Maisa Merkava. He would read the various Kabbalistic understandings of the ways of Hashem, V'oila b'mokam Suda Shabbos. So if you know it, you know it. Meaning, we all know that all the mitzvahs we do somehow correspond on a very high level to the various, that go through the various olamos of Atzilus, Bria, Yitzira, Asiya. We're in the Olam Asiya. So they all go back. There's a progression back up, and they have certain influences in the way it works and in the spiritual realms. If you think you know, what I'm talking about, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just telling you what it says in the Sfarim. But Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who fully understood how all this works, So he, even in a physical situation, he wasn't physically able to fulfill any mitzvah, but he knew exactly which channel to tune into, so to speak. He knew exactly where in Shemayim that spiritual path was, so he was able to have the proper kavanas and say the proper tikkunim to fulfill that mitzvah in the best possible way, even without a physical manifestation. That's how this sefer explains it when it comes to Erev Pesach Chal B'Shabbos. So too says the Ben Ishchai, in the last couple lines of that paragraph, says, "Bavadai b'zman shehaya b'ma'ara," when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave, "haya loy made soydis el yoinim." Just keep this in mind, because we'll get to this more in a minute, that when Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave, he learned the most deepest of secrets of Torah, "be'eish shloisha sudais," at the time of the three sudas of Shabbos, "latzeis behem idei chavasa gimel sudas," and with that he fulfilled the three sudas of Shabbos, also at the time of eating matzah, and the time of taking lulav, etc. All these things he knew the proper kavanas to have and to say, and he fulfilled the mitzvah in the best way possible for him. Now, in a similar vein, we know the Gemara tells us specifically, he doesn't quote the Gemara here, but we know the Gemara says that now b'zman hazeh we don't have karbonis. Person unfortunately does an aver, he wants to be makir a karbon, so we say, person can say the parsha of the oila, parsha of chatas, and it's ilu, he was makir of the karbonis. So we see this precedent in Chazal that even for us, who don't maybe have know all these kavanas, who don't understand this, the side of the Maaseh Merkava, but there are certain ways that we can tap into to getting it on some level. The Ben Ishchai happens to paskin himself. This is a sugya we spoke about once, the sugya of Hira Kedibur Dami, right? The halacha is that if someone thinks about something, it's a big question whether or not it's as if he uttered it with his mouth or not. That comes to a big shaila about sphira. So Omer, if a person just doesn't even say the sphira, but if he just thinks about it, whether or not that could be yaitza or not, most places can say not, but the Ben Ishchai happens to paskin, maybe it's connected to this, I don't know, I don't have time to work it through properly, that if a person's in a matzah, let's say a person lost his voice, has some form of laryngitis, something like that, so usually we tell a person that, you know, he should listen to the bracha of somebody else, and that's if he has no voice, that's what he's got to do. But the Ben Ishchai is of the opinion that in certain situations, if a person thinks through the bracha properly, it's as also as if he has uttered it, and it can give him some schar for that in the situation that he's in. So perhaps that ties into this idea that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, when he was in the Ma'ara, couldn't physically do any physical manifestation of the mitzvah. There was no matzah, there was no mar, there was no sukkah, but whatever he was able to do with learning and speaking out the Torah related to it was able to fulfill the mitzvah. However, I found the Chashuke Chemed, which is a contemporary of Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita, he asks a little bit of a different question. He's focusing particularly on sukkah, and he says, okay, we know Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had a tree. Presumably there were some branches of the tree. Could Rav Shimon Bar Yochai have broken off some of those branches and made a sukkah, and made schach? Okay, a technical detail, maybe there was a break in the cave somewhere. Okay, I'm not sure exactly how to work it out, exactly how he would have built a sukkah. But he's clarifying the shaila, is such a tree kosher for schach? Well, you would say, why not? We know anything which grows from the ground, l'chaira presumably is kosher for schach. But the question is, did the tree grow from the ground, or did it just pop out of the ground? The Gemara says it was a nes. So he brings a fascinating discussion about, based on the sugya of Menachos, the Gemara there is discussing, not clear exactly what the Gemara is referring to, but the Gemara calls it chitim sheyardu ba'avim. If you have wheat that was delivered by clouds, somehow, this is days before drones, if something fell from the heaven, it was coming from, particularly from a miraculous source. It wasn't coming from somebody who sent it to you via a drone. So the Gemara discusses if you have this chitim that somehow appeared miraculously, could they be used for menachos? Could they be used in the service of the karbanos or not? And the Rambam is of the opinion that even though it came with derech nes, it's still kosher. So that would seem to imply that even things that are created through a nes, based on this Rambam, would be kosher, same way it's kosher for menachos, it's kosher for the service of the Beis HaMikdash, it would be kosher for any other mitzvah. However, he brings the Shlah HaKadosh, the Shlah discusses the halacha of someone, let's say, who's well-versed in Sefer Yetzirah, which is a Kabbalistic Sefer, and he learns from there how to produce an animal, and he would produce an animal out of Kabbalistic methods, would that animal require shechita or not? And the Shlach Kaddish says, no. Shechita is only required on an animal that was created in its natural, in a natural way. Anything which created b'derech nes, the Shlach Kaddish writes, would not require shechita. And he says, he explains with that fascinating, the whole story with Yosef and his brothers. Yosef tells Yaakov, he sees his brothers eating Eiver Menachai. So, and he tells his father, he sees the brothers walking around with strange women. What's pshat? And he tells his father, he sees his brothers be mevaza, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. What's going on? So the Shlach HaKadosh learns to answer all these three questions that the Shvatim the B'nai Leah had the Messiah of the Sefer Yetzirah passed down from Avram, passed down from Adam Rishon. They had a whole Messiah on it, and they would use the Sefer Yetzirah according to the Shlah, and they created animals. They would eat those animals, but animals didn't require Shechita. So Yosef saw his brothers eating Eiver Menachai, but it wasn't really Eiver Menachai. It was just the animals that created Sefer Yetzirah. He saw them walking around with women who he didn't recognize, but they were women that were created from Sefer Yetzirah. There was no problem. He saw them being mevadze, the Bnei HaShvachas. What does that mean according to the Shlah? It means that because they would not share this Sefer Yetzirah with the children of Bnei Bilah, Bnei Zilpah, because they felt that they were the ones that have to keep this Messiah, and they weren't going to share with them. It wasn't that they were actually degrading them, they just weren't sharing, so to speak, the wealth with them. So that's how the Shlah Kaddish understands that whole story with Yosef and the brothers. But be as it may, what we see from the Shlah, that anything which comes by Derech Nes is not bound by the regular halachas. He brings similarly the Radak in Navi by the story of Elisha and Eshes Avadja. Eshes Avadja, the wife of Avadja, Avadja was away, and his wife was suffering terribly, and she had no money. She comes to Elisha. Elisha says, well, what do you have in the house? She says she has one jug of oil, right? We all know the story. He tells her to keep pouring. She goes ahead and borrows all the neighbor's kelim until the whole neighborhood has no pots and pans left, and she has tons of oil, and she makes a killing selling all that oil. Great. So then the Radak says, she sends a message to Elisha, am I chayav to separate maestros, am I chayav to separate tithes from all that miraculous oil? Oil is usually chayav in maestros. And the Radak there says, brings it to Sefta, anything becomes b'derech neis, anything which comes in a miraculous way, is pater from trumas and maestros. So you see, it's similar to the Shlah, that it will be pater, it's not considered as if it grew from the ground, because it just sort of popped out of nowhere. So bottom line is that we have a machlaikis, if something is created by Derech Neis, whether or not it will be kosher or not. He brings the Chiddush Arim and Rav Chaim Brisker as well, who discusses the Gabe the Halacha of Menorah. We discussed this once by Hanukkah time. How can they fulfill the mitzvah of lighting the Menorah in the Beis HaMikdash with the oil that also only came about through a Neis? Miraculously, the oil kept going. So could you be Yaitzah the mitzvah of lighting Menorah in the Beis HaMikdash with such oil? Okay, this is all interesting discussion, but bottom line, what the question we started with was, could Rav Shimon Bar Yochai use those branches for a sukkah or not? Would come out of be machlokes between the Rambam and the other Svarim, whether or not something which is created by Derech Neis is kosher for mitzvahs or not. So according to the Rambam, perhaps we can say that this schach, these branches, would have been kosher theoretically for a sukkah, but according to the other Svarim, it would come out that we cannot build this would not be kosher for schach, because it's not considered that it grew from the ground. We consider it as if it just kind of popped out of nowhere.
If he could go out and bird up people and make salasudas, well, there's no problem with the sukkah.
Because?
Because he can create, he knows
the. Right, well, that's right. According to that answer, the Ben Ishchai, you're right. He was able just to sit in the cave and have the proper kavanah for it. But we're saying, would it have been kosher for him to build the schach from those branches? Would those branches have been kosher for schach?
The ones that were
that miraculously grew for him, that carob tree that grew for him, would have those branches, theoretically, would have they have been kosher for schach? According to the previous answer, the Ben Ishchai, in the Truvis, you're right. He didn't have to do it. He was yaitzeh through his learning. But if he would have wanted to build it, or not, if you don't go with that answer, we're just discussing, would it have been kosher for him to use those branches for schach or not? Do we consider them to have grown from the ground, because lamaisa they're coming out of the ground? Or do we say that no, since they were created with derech neis, they came through a miraculous way, they're not considered to have grown from the ground. They're just considered to have popped out of the ground. This same question gets into the next shaila, which is in source 8 and 9. The shaila is, was there an Isser Arla on the buxer, on the carob that grew? We all know that the halacha is the first 3 years that a tree produces fruits, those fruits are usher to eat. So the question is, now, I quoted this question from the Sefer Ha'aris, which is Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal, and from his son-in-law, Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, who discussed the shaila. Just that we shouldn't think it's some Hasidish shaila or it's some funny question. The Litvish Gedalim are bothered by this shaila. How could it be that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai ate from the tree? And Rabbi Yashiv, when he gave shir, this is from his shir on Masechta Shabbos, he discussed the shaila in the shir. This is something he discussed, so we can discuss it also, right? So Rabbi Yashiv asked, what was it? Was it chayav and arlo or not? So first he says that an answer similar to what we just spoke out, that since it didn't really grow from the ground, it just... The first answer he says was that since only things which are planted... He says, even though usually we say things that grow in a place, it's a machlokes rishonim, but the first answer Rabbi Yashiv says that there are many rishonim hold that even things which grow in hefker are going to be chayav in arla. That's only where it was planted. here was not planted, he says, so be potter from Arla. But then he says, you could say even more than that, like we just spoke out previously from this idea from the Chashukei Chemed, also Rabbi Yashu's son-in-law, that anything which comes through a nace is nismayet, is excluded from the whole halacha of having chi of Arla, since it didn't really grow from the ground, just kind of popped out of the ground, that would also absolve it from the halachas of Arla. So bottom line, quote Rabbi Yashiv, is that it will be potter from Arla halachically, notwithstanding the fact that anyway, like Rav Neil said before, like we spoke out, he was in a matzav of einus, it was pikuach nefesh, if he wouldn't have eaten it, probably would not have made it through the 12 years in the cave, and I think it's pretty, 13 years, I think it's pretty miraculous that he did sustain even just on carob. If anybody ever had the schus of tasting carob, it's very not usually very enjoyable by most people, at least under the age of... it's not usually very tasty. I remember as a kid, they used to give it to us in yeshiva on Tu B'Shvat. The kids, we always used to thought it was chocolate at first. We all took a big bite of it, and then it all ended up kind of being expelled. It wasn't something we all enjoyed very much. We didn't have appreciation for it at that young age. My grandfather told me later on, you have to first dip it in tea. That kind of sweetens it up a little bit. But okay, Vinishtvi, it's not the most enjoyable thing. But he was in Matzav of Oynis. So besides that, even though, notwithstanding that fact that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in Matzav of Oynis, halachically it would have been Potter from Orla. Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita and Derech Emuna, which is his magnum opus on the halachas of Zroyim, it's written like a Mishnah Berurah style on all the halachas of Hilchas Zroyim. There he discussed Barichas. He has also three terutzim. A lot of them are similar to what we spoke at already of why... this carob, Chaim Kanievsky, why the carob tree would be potter from Arla, and therefore there was no halachic concern of how Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was able to eat it. Okay, let's move on because the clock is still moving. The next shaila I wanted to discuss is Lamaisa, what did they learn in the cave? 13 years they sat in the cave uninterrupted, they learned Torah, right? So, and many of us are familiar with the song we all sing, maybe some of us will sing it tonight or today, or we sang it last night. Bar Yochai, what do we sing? Moishev Toiv Yoshafta, you sat in a good place, meaning obviously it doesn't mean physically he sat in a good place, but he sat in a good place of a cave, uninterrupted in learning. Yoim Nasta, Yoim Shabarach, the day you had to flee, the day you ran away from the Romans. Bima'oras Turim Shamata, the song says, in the cave of stones that you were established there, Shom Kanisa Haidcha V'Hadorecha, there you acquire your splendor and your beauty. That's what we say in the song. So there he acquired great levels of Torah. But what Torah did he acquire there? So everyone knows that Rav Shimon is famous for the Zohar. But like we started off before, there's over 4,000 times that Rav Shimon is quoted lahalacha in the regular part of Torah, in Nigla. So we have 4,000 plus times of Rav Shimon being quoted. So which part of Torah was his focus for 13 years? So here we have in source number 10, it's from the Sefer Igros HaKodesh LeBaal Tanya. The Baal Tanya at the end of Sefer HaTanya has very numerous letters. And there, it's literally parenthetically, literally in parentheses there, he says, he's discussing the whole idea of what Torah, kashas and Torah, what they represent. It's a little bit too deep for us right now, but he just says in parentheses there, V'gam be'emes al karachach is ikker eskeyem bim'ora, the main occupation they did in the cave, ha'yotayras ha'mishnayis, they learned regular Torah Shabbat Peh. Tough Reish Sidre. They had 600 Seder of Mishnayis in those days of the Tanakh. We're familiar with the 6 Sidre Mishnah, right? In those days, before Yehuda Nasi compiled everything and kind of minimized it to 6 things, this was the original, so to speak, raw, unedited format of Torah Shabbat Peh. It was much more vast than we have today. And Ad Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Ilu Sefer HaZoyah says about Tanya, if you would just tell me they were learning Sefer HaZoyah V'atikunim, ha'yoyachal ligmar bezikim ha'chadashim. They could have finished the whole Zohar in 2 or 3 months. It can't be they were busy doing Zohar for so long, says the Helig of Baal Tanya. Now keep in mind, Baal Tanya was, besides a big bucky in Halacha, was quite a big bucky in Sifrei Kabbalah as well. And he's very confident to say that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the cave could have finished Zohar in 2 or 3 months. Ki bevadei lo amar dover echad beis pa'amim. They definitely weren't repeating themselves. They weren't just chazing over the same shit over and over again. There was this chadish halacha. If there was continuous chiddush going on, says the Hilig of Baal Tanya, it must be they learned nigla, regular gemara, regular shtiklach Torah, regular chiddush Torah they did for 13 years in the cave. That's what the Baal Tanya learns. The challenge to this is that in the other song that we sing about Bar Yochai, right? The first song we sang was Bar Yochai. There's another song that goes V'yamatem kai lachai, right? And I'm not going to sing the whole song here, but part of that phrase over there goes, he was hidden in the cave. There he learned the Sisrei Torah. And that's what it says, Tikkunei Zohar, that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, when he was in the cave, spent the primary part of his time discussing Kabbalistic ideas. So what's going on? We have a stira in songs. For those who sing both songs, we have a stira. And Seemingly, Tikkuni Azara seems to support this idea that he learned Sisrei Torah. And this question is spoken out by the Munkach Rebbe, which is source 11 in the Sefer Divrei Torah, the Minchas Elazar, who's also quite a bucky in Sifrei HaNigla and Sifrei HaNister. And I'm not going to read through the whole thing, but about a little more than halfway down, he says, Ze Yifla, Ma'oi, this is very wondrous. He writes in the parentheses there, B'mechilas Kfoy Terosai HaGedula Shal Rav HaGoyin HaKadosh of the Baal Tanya, and after Achoy Neshikas Ofaragov, after I kissed the dust on the Baal Tanya's feet, meaning he's being submissive to the Wahelig of Baal Tanya, he says, I don't understand. How are you so confident, he asked the Baal Tanya, that Rav Shem Ba'achoy only learned Niglas at Torah, only the regular part of Torah, and he did not spend his time in the cave learning the Sisrei Torah. And he ends off that, according to his opinion, they spent much time learning Sisrei Torah as well. However, I saw in the Sefer Sha'ar Mitzion Bahalacha, which is source number 12, and this I saw also my friend of Don Abelev, who wasn't able to make it this morning, share with me from in some of the Sifrei Chabad. They explain this as well, to explain the Baal HaTanya, what the Baal HaTanya meant, that they only learned in Nigla HaTorah, not Nister HaTorah. So in the left column here, in the Sha'ar Mitzion Bahalacha, he quotes from a Sefer Likutei Biurim HaTanya, which for some reason I couldn't find in the Shul's Oitzer. He explains that the basic idea is that...
Next to
the Zohar, right? The basic idea over here is that when it comes to Torah Shabbat Peh, regular, we'll call regular Nigla Torah Shabbat Peh, so there's more details, more to discuss, there's all different... possibilities, and this is really supported from the Gemara, when the Gemara we said before said that after Rav Shimon Ba'achai came out of the cave, he's told Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, I'm able to answer you in 24 different ways, because there's so much, the Torah is Ein Sof. But when it comes to Torah's HaNister, unless there's questions, so to speak, from a Talmud who doesn't understand what's happening, it's all clear. This is the way it is. It's kind of like a single path highway that it's kind of teaching us. We're not maybe on the proper madriga to understand the problem, so we might have a lot of questions in it, but it's more of a straight path of just speaking out the sidus of how the various alamas al-yoinim work, and doesn't have that vast never-ending sea of kashas and terutzim that are shaykh and Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh, we know, is a yam. It's a never-ending sea. So that's why the Baal Tanya was of the opinion, they explained, that he learned this, the Torah Shabbat Peh, regular Nigla, not Nister, because Nister, just speaking it out, if he would just share the secrets of Torah to his son, if Rav Shimon was just sharing it with his son, Rabbi Lazar, that would not have taken so much time. There's no questions. It's all just straightforward. These are the teachings, and this is the way it works. Okay, that's one mahalach how to answer the Baal Tanya. Bottom line, we have Machlokes in the songs, and we have Machlokes Baal Tanya and Munkach Rebbe, what exactly they learned. They could be they did both, but that would, you know, come on. We want to have machlekes, right? Okay, so now there's a fascinating Chuvas Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, which I quoted here from the Pisachei Chuva on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch. There the halachas are talking about in the Shulchan Aruch about Hilchas Tzedakah. Which aniyim come first? Aniyim the Irch, aniyim Eretz Yisrael, aniyim Yerushalayim. All different hierarchy in the halachas of Tzedakah, which we're not going to get into right now. Pisachei Chuva over there in Ois Dalid quotes a Chassam Sofer who discusses this. And then at the end of that Chuva, which is at the end of the Pisachei Chuva there, he says, Chassam Sofer also mentions this whole idea of people going up on Lag BaOmer to visit the Ma'ara, visit the cave, the burial spot of Shimon Bar Yochai Meiron. And the Chassam Sofer was very bewildered by it. You know, it's great to have to so to speak, remember the Eretz of Shimon Bar Yochai. The halacha is we don't say Tachan on that day, but to make a whole new Yomtif out of it. And Chassam Sofer was very upset already in his day that he felt it was going a little bit too much to an extreme, that people were making this like a new holiday and that it wasn't based in Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. However, I found in the Stechemet, which is source 14, the Stechemet, after he quotes the Chassam Sofer, quotes from a Tshuva Shem Aryeh. And Shem Aryeh says, I want to explain the answer to the Chassam Sofer's problem very simply. He says, think about it for a minute. What are we celebrating on Lag BaOmer? We're celebrating that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai died. How was he nifter on Lag BaOmer? In a regular way. He died of his old age, whatever, we don't know exactly, whatever reason why he was nifter at that age, whatever it was. But we could have had a much worse situation. If Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wouldn't have been caught right away by the Romans so many years earlier, what would have happened? We would not have been zeicha to all this great Eskala Satira, Sai Ben Nigla, and Sai Ben Nister. So we're celebrating Lag BaOmer. Why is it a shame, Ari? Not to make a new yontif, just to commemorate the nais that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was saved from the Romans, and the fact that he was able to hide himself and be so submerged in Torah for so many uninterrupted years and rise to such a high level that he's quoted over 4,000 times in Shas and Sifrei Sifrei HaNigla, and hundreds, if not thousands, more times in Sifrei HaKabbalah. We would never have gotten to all those halachas without this whole Shimon Bar Yochai escaping and hiding in the cave for so long. So he says, what are we celebrating on Lag BaOmer? It's true, that's the day of Shimon Bar Yochai was nifter. We're celebrating particularly the fact that he was nifter from, so to speak, regular old age, and not that he was caught by the Romans. If he would have been caught by the Romans and have been killed, chas v'shalom, in some gruesome fashion, we probably would not have known where he was buried. We would have been zeichet all that tire. So he speaks about it. I'm just cutting it very short now. But he says, that's what we're celebrating on Lag BaOmer, and that's how he wants to answer the Chassam Sofer's problem. So I wanted to speak out, like Rabbi Scott mentioned in the beginning, that Lag BaOmer today, besides being the famous yahrzeit of Shimon Bar Yochai, is also the yahrzeit of the Ramah. The Ramah was the Rav of Krakow. He was nifter on Lag BaOmer as well. The Ramah was nifter on Lag BaOmer. He lived 33 years and wrote 33 Sfarim. So now we can try to figure out exactly how it all connects. But I was thinking last night, how could we connect the Ramah and Shimon Bar Yochai particularly? I'm sure there's many ways to do it, but Bederach Jush, I was thinking as follows. Numerous times we find in the Paiskim say a Melitza. They say that, how do we always Paskin like the Ramah. Why? Because we have a Pasuk in the Torah that says, Ubnei Yisrael Yoytzim Biyod Ramah. And Parshas B'Shalach, Klai Yisrael went out, Biyod Ramah. There it's spelled Reish Mem Hey. But all the Paiskim use it as a Melitza to always tell us, that's how we know we always Paskin like the Ramah. The Bnei Yisrael go after the Ramah. The Targum Unkelis over there on that Pasuk touches up the Pasuk, Ubnei Yisrael Nefaku Bereish Gali. Klai Yisrael goes out, Bereish Gali. So, my Elta Zayda, Degel Machan Ephraim, the Engel from the Baal Shem, explains, what's Pshat? Why Bereish Gali? He says, the Zohar says in Hagdamah that the right before Mashiach, there'll be a tremendous revelation of Sifrei HaZohar. People will be learning Zohar and come to a high level of understanding Torah, B'Torah HaNister. And he says, that's Merumas in this Targum. B'nei Yisrael Nefoku, B'nei Yisrael go out from their final goal is Bereish Gali. Bereish, if you mix up the letters, are Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Reish Shin Beis Yud, Bereish. Beis, if you mix up the letters, it's Rashbi. He says B'nei Yisrael will go out from their final goal is to be in Hizgale with the Hizgalas of the Torah of the Rashbi through the learning of the Sisrei HaTorah. So it happens to be, it's maybe a coincidence, that how we Paskin like the Ramah, and the fact that the Hizgalas of the Torah of the Rashbi is Merumas in the same Pasuk, it happens to be in the, this happened to be, happened to have the same yard site. Just to end off with one Litvish Amaisa, so the, as we said, the Ramah's yard site is today as well. So it used to be the Minig in Krakow, many Rabbanim from neighboring towns throughout Poland would come to Krakow on the yard site of the Ramah, come to the Beis HaKfaris, and daven there, and then they would have some type of rabbinical reception. So in the times of the Sholem Eishev, a little over, maybe about 150 years ago, Sholem Eishev, who was from the Gedolei HaPoskim throughout Europe, came to Krakow on Lag BaOmer, as was the Minig, and went to the tzion of the Ramah. Afterwards, they had a little reception in one of the Rabbanim's houses, and one of the Rabbanim say, you know, Rav Yosef Shol, the Sholem Eishev, why don't you be machaber us with some drush? Say something to cover Lag BaOmer. He says, drush? I didn't come here to have drush. Let's have some real Torah on Lag BaOmer. Why? He tells one of the Rabbanim over there, why don't you tell me every machlokes in Shas between Abaye and Rava? So the guy says, okay, sure, no problem. Off the bat, he starts going through Masechtas Brachas. That, you know, every, there's basically every within every three blot of Shas, there's at least one machlokes of Abaye and Rava. And he starts going through Brachas, Shabbos, Erev, and Pesachim, and he's going through Shalmesh, sitting there nodding, listening quietly, okay, keep going, keep going. They go through Brachas, Moed, Nashim, gets into Nezikin, they're going through Baba Kama, I don't know how long this is going on for. In the middle of Masechtas Shavuos, the Shalmesh tells him, okay, stop. He says, why? He says, well, today is Lag BaOmer, and you already missed 33 machlokes in between Abaye and Rava, so you can stop now. You got your yaitza 33. So we have the yartzai of the Ramah, we have the yartzai of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, we shall be zeiche. Just wanted to end off one more vart. I thought this was Gevald Gevar. We all going to sing this song, or we maybe heard the song, Bar Yochai Nimshachta Ashrecha, right? Why are we singing Bar Yochai? The whole song doesn't mention his name, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Why are we singing Bar Yochai? The Chayr, it's a little bit degrading. We should sing Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and all the great things. We're always calling him by, so to speak, his last name or his father's name. Why don't we say Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? So I saw in a sefer called Madani Usher, they wanted to say as follows. We're here, we're singing the praises of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We say in that song, Nasa Adam Never Bavurecha, the whole pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people is worth it just for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We're singing these tremendous praises on the highest of high levels that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai attained, but we're constantly saying Bar Yochai. We're reminding ourselves that he was a Yelud Isha. He came from Basar V'dam. We don't believe in these, like other religions believe in some other fairy tales of how people come to be and rise to high levels. We believe that a human being coming from flesh and blood, coming from a real father and mother, could even rise to high levels. That's a message we can all take to heart, that no matter where we come from, we all come from the same flesh and blood, we can all rise to the highest of levels if we would just stick ourselves in a cave, whether literally or figuratively, we can figure out how to build our own cave of be able to learn Torah on the highest of levels. Ashkeh.
this.